On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we discuss the news we've all been waiting for. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. gets his massive extension with the Toronto Blue Jays. $500 million for Vlad Jr. What it means for him, what it means for the Blue Jays, and what to think about Toronto moving forward. And then we recap all the action in MLB over the weekend. Five sweeps we have to review, and then we'll fly through the rest of the series, get you all caught up on what happened in the wide world of baseball. In this episode, Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world thinking about how Canadian icon Vladimir Guerrero Jr. can score 896 career goals. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And if I'm Alexander Ovechkin, I'm concerned that Vlad's going to be in Canada for that long. Record, watch.
Yeah. Can Vlad Jr. skate? This is not the question I expected to be debating on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast, but a question I am now wondering.
Maybe that is what the Blue Jays were so hesitant about, right? Can you really, as the Canadian team, extend a contract to a player that can't even lace him up?
I don't know. I don't know if Vlad Jr. will be asked about his skating prowess whenever he officially inks his 14-year, $500 million extension, which was reported late on Sunday night. This is a deal that slowly trickled out over the past week, arguably over the past few months, as Vlad Jr. and the Blue Jays tried to meet in the middle and find a number that both sides were comfortable with, and it indeed happened. And that is why it is today's opener.
14 years, $500 American dollars, no deferrals, no opt-outs, no problems. Vlad Jr. is a Blue Jay for life. Lot to process, lot to pick apart, lot to think about. Jordan, you have been optimistic the entire time that this was going to get done. I was pessimistic the entire time. Bad day for deadlines, right?
Yes.
Bad day to be a deadline. Now the next time a player says, I'm not negotiating past this date, I'm going to say, you are lying to me, and that does not actually matter. Because remember, Vlad set a day during the beginning of spring training, who said, after this, I'm not talking.
Which was funny because it felt like we actually ended up talking about it more after that date than before it. Of course, we've had conversations over the offseason about this. I had Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet on at the turn of the year. Right when you were on your honeymoon, I remember we did a pod on December 30th and we discussed the status of the negotiations. And I went back and listened to that conversation with our beloved BNS. And I kind of gave this impassioned plea about how this is the guy. Like, the Blue Jays have been chasing these big fish over the last couple of years, going after Ohtani, going after Juan Soto, and Juan Soto is an important part of this conversation as well. But ultimately, this is a player that has been a Blue Jay all along. It has been almost 10 years since Vlad Jr. joined the Blue Jays organization as a 16-year-old, getting one of the largest bonuses in the 2015 international class, as you know, signing out of the Dominican Republic. But as we also know, the story of Vlad Jr. playing for Canada's team begins in Canada when he is born in Montreal, when his dad is playing with the Expos. He has that epic homecoming before he is even a major leaguer, 2018, when he hits the walk-off home run against the Cardinals in the spring training exhibition in Montreal. One of the great highlights. One of the great highlights that didn't count. I mean, is it the greatest spring training moment ever?
It is the greatest spring training moment ever. Maybe the time like Luis Guillorme caught the bat. Remember Luis Guillorme caught the bat?
Yeah, or Randy Johnson hitting the bird, I think would be up there on a spring training moment. But as far as on-field, you know, highlights, home runs, like that is so singular. Of course, it was a unique exhibition situation. That was so cool. And that's Vlad a year before he debuts. That's like right after his 19th birthday when he's this hotshot prospect. A guy who signs for that big bonus, who carries the weight of expectations of a Hall of Fame father. So many players who are hyped up at that age do not live up to what they are supposed to be. And Vlad Jr. has done it. He has somehow done it. He has taken that, and he has now got himself a half a billion dollar contract. Now, that is a product of a very fascinating negotiation that has taken place over the last really calendar year, but certainly over the last few months. But it is something that he has earned, and it is something that I am certainly happy to see finally come together, because ultimately this made too much sense for both sides to not happen.
The Blue Jays deserve both credit and criticism, in my mind. Credit for getting it done. Because at the end of the day, fans don't care what the number is, right? That doesn't matter. It's a binary question. Is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on the Blue Jays? Is he not on the Blue Jays? It's not my money. I don't care what you're paying, right? And so, yes or no, is he still here? Will he be here for a long time? Is a yes. Now, they deserve some criticism for the procrastination that got to this point, for not understanding or for not valuing properly what was in their own house, under their nose, the entire time. With all the energy and effort spent towards getting Soto or Otani or Sasaki, all these various free agent pursuits that they made, as they decided to go that direction and not get to a number with Vlad, the price went up, right? They could have had Vlad for $350 a couple of years ago, and they waited and they waited, and now they had to pay $500 million. And how that impacts the team and the franchise moving forward, whether they're able to spend money because they're paying Vlad, that is something that no Blue Jay fan is thinking about today, or at least should be thinking about today. Let's be clear. This is a good day. This is a day of celebration, a day that I personally did not think was going to happen. I thought that the negotiations got contentious enough and passed the deadline enough that he was going to at least hit the open market. And I think that something that is very interesting about these negotiations to me is the leverage that Vlad had despite not being a free agent. So Juan Soto's able to get the Yankees and Mets to bid against one another and get the price up. Vlad had a different dynamic where he was like, look, Toronto, you cannot afford to let me go. You cannot afford to let me go. And I think that is what got the number to the $500 million mark that he was clearly seeking.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of that, and it is that Soto deal that he got. Whether Vlad Jr. views himself as good enough as whether anybody views Vlad as a similar player to Juan Soto, we understand why Soto got the number he did because of so many factors that combined the open market, the big teams that were bidding him up, the fact that he was as young as he was, the fact that he has done it in the postseason, all those things, the fact that his floor is higher than
Soto is a better player. Yeah.
100%. 100%. That said, you can understand that Vlad Jr., who has ascended at the same time. He is 5 months younger than Juan Soto. They signed the same year back in 2015. These two generational Dominican hitters that reached the big leagues in a flash and have accomplished more before they turn 26 than most hitters will in their entire careers, right? These guys view themselves as peers. And I think Vlad realized the leverage that you just mentioned, that Toronto needs me. I want to be here, but Toronto needs me. And the fact that I can get to the open market a year from now, and I am looking at prime years ahead of me, and that is something that teams are going to be willing to pay for, while also recognizing that I'm not Juan Soto, I am a first baseman, Pete Alonso couldn't get anything on the open market.
Disrespect.
Even from a team that wanted to give him, that wanted to keep him, right? He played it correctly.
Yeah.
He wanted to be a Blue Jay. And he also understood his value as someone who had produced at a level. His ceiling was clearly, one of the best hitters on the planet. He's done that now for multiple seasons. And the connection that he had with an organization that is at a very crucial time in their franchise, to where they are facing, they were looking at a life after Vlad that could have been very bleak. And that is the big part. That was really the leverage that I think existed here, on top of the fact that you can understand why a team would like to have Vlad Jr. on their, have them around. I mean, a lot of teams would like to have Vlad Jr. around, but that part of it too, the timing, understanding where the Blue Jays are as a franchise, is also very important.
I think as a whole, this is good for baseball. I also think that the Dodgers spending all the money they're spending is good for baseball. However, from a narrative perspective, having game-changing, iconic players being in one uniform for the entirety of their career is fundamental to the sport. It is fundamental because it allows fans to become invested in young players when they come up and maintain a genuine belief that they will be in a city, in a community, in an organization for the entirety of their careers. Sometimes that does not happen. Juan Soto, not a National, right?
Or a Padre.
Or a Yankee.
Right?
Sometimes it doesn't happen. Yeah. Who knows what happens with Paul Skeens or Gunnar Henderson, right? But it is the idea that this could happen to your favorite player, even if your team is not necessarily a big market team. And I think, to me, that is what is so encouraging. That if everything goes, let's say the rest of Vlad's career is like 50th percentile outcome, right? He's not a Hall of Famer, but he's really good. He puts up like 56 career WAR and finishes with like 370 homers or something. Probably still a statue, right? Probably still a retired number. Probably still a guy who Blue Jays fans remember forever. And like, to me, obviously World Series are great. Like, that is the point of all of this, right? But also the connection is the point of all of this. It is caring about a person, of a thing, and remembering it and letting it matter.
Yeah. And I think, so two more things I definitely want to hit on with this. So the first thing is like, you know, the price going up and up and up. One just funny thing about like extension discourse, which obviously we have been doing plenty of recently, is like, and we'll turn our attention to Kyle Tucker here at the end of this conversation. But it is amusing to me, the timing of these things, because when you have a player like Kyle Tucker who's approaching free agency, what often happens, and I've already seen it as Kyle Tucker has had this tremendous start to his season, right, is like, we got a, you know, our, you know, Mr. Dom, number one Cubs fan, director of morale, he's tweeted, it's like, Kyle Tucker, it's homer, it's like, all right, we got to have the extension in the dugout. It's like, well, guess what? That's the worst time to negotiate extension, because every time Kyle Tucker hits a home run, he is getting closer and more likely to go to free agency. Whereas Vlad Jr., hilariously, how did he end his weekend? Grounding out to end the game, right, as the Blue Jays get swept against the Mets. That's the exact time you should go to Vlad Jr. and be like, let's get this deal done.
Price of the brick going down.
So listen, does Vlad's first week where he hasn't homered yet have any indication on whether he was going to get $550 million or $500? No, but it is funny the way that we talk about it, because when fans want the extension is oftentimes, especially when free agency is approaching, not when their players are going to do that. Now, the other thing I want to not push back on, but point out about what you said, I totally agree, right? That is such a big part of fandom. Players want to be able to connect to teams, or fans want to be able to connect to players on their teams for a long period of time and know they can buy the jersey, know they're going to be there. You mentioned, right, we have seen a number of these extensions. We've seen it for Bobby Witt. We've seen it for Julio. We've seen it for in some of these other smaller markets. Corbin Carroll, right? Great examples. That said, you know, you mentioned Paul Skeens. You mentioned, of course, Elly De La Cruz, another one. I imagine fans in Cincinnati and Pittsburgh would love to have Rogers Communications as their ownership, because Toronto is not a small market.
Correct.
This is the other big part of this discussion, which is that Toronto, in their pursuits in free agency over the past few years, and which some of which have failed, some of which have succeeded, obviously most of which have failed at the high end, they have spent a ton of money and their payroll is now exceptionally high. That said, this is another very important thing about this. And I made this point when we talked to BNS a couple months ago. This contract is not something that is going to be an anchor on the Toronto Blue Jays finances. The Blue Jays payroll right now is at a exceptionally high level. I think it is fourth in baseball. I think it's pretty comfortably top five. They have soared over the luxury tax. This extension is not impacting Vlad, what Vlad is making this year. It is 14 years on top of his final year of ARB, in which he's making $30 million this year. The Blue Jays have a ton of money coming off the books over the next 2 years. Now, that is good news and bad news. The good news is that, in theory, if they are willing to flex their, you know, we are Canada's team, we have a ton of money, we are a big market muscle, they should be able to continue to invest and acquire talent to put around Vlad Jr. The bad news is it's a lot harder to see mostly who is going to be pitching for this team anytime soon, as we have talked about this pitching staff that is both aging and or their contract is up. And then, of course, Bo Bichette also reaching free agency.
And the farm system kind of stinks.
And the farm system is not good. All of those things is to say, Vlad Jr. making $37 million a year, like, yeah, that is a lot to pay a first baseman, as we know. But Vlad Jr. in his prime for the next 4 or 5 years making $37 million, while the payroll is now about to go down by $100 million, this is not Giancarlo in Miami. It is not. It should never be. And if it is, something has changed, and that is a problem with Toronto, if they are now at any point viewing Vlad Jr.'s contract as holding them down. That is not the situation they're in. This is, if anything, the ultimate declaration that Toronto will be investing in its baseball team.
I think the Jays belong in the second tier of spenders in baseball, right?
Absolutely.
I think the Mets and the Dodgers are their own level. There's a little gap. And then it's like Yankees, Phillies, Jays right now. Like, that's where it is. What do you say?
Red Sox.
Red Sox.
I think are now back in that.
Three months ago, I would not have said that. But yes, Red Sox. And then there's like gap, Cubs, Braves, you know, that next kind of tier. The Blue Jays, look at their payroll. It is very significant.
I think it's,
they're at $251 million right now. That is, they have, oh my God, they have so, like, it's really just how many players you have on the roster that are like free agent, like post-ARB, right? Whether that's extension or you sign through free agency, it's so many guys, right? Springer, Gossman, Bassett, Jimenez on an extension, Barrios on an extension. They're paying Max Scherzer $15.5 million to, you know, massage his thumb.
Well, and this is the question now, because you have him in place, but what does the team look like around him? What are we building around him? We have Andrés Giménez in place, off to a great start to the season. He's 26 years old. You at least know you're getting, you know, a good, probably at least above average total package at second base, but he's making a good amount of money. Santander, you just gave a bunch of money. It's early start stage of that contract, but he's already 30. Bo Bichette at this point, seems unlikely he will be joining Vlad long-term as part of this infield, but you at least have one more year of him. But then beyond that, it's just like, where is this pitching going to come from in the future? There is a lot of position players on the way at the lower levels, at the upper levels. There's a lot of depth that they've assembled around Vlad to where you can imagine them having a pretty good lineup around him, even without Bo. But that's the challenge now. That is what this front office has to do. Because the fan base has obviously been fed up with the front office for a few reasons over the past year. Not getting this deal done with Vlad is now not what you can criticize them for, but now it is about, you know, assembling stuff.
I do still think there's a scenario where if the Jays don't make the playoffs this year, there's a change of leadership at the top. I think that's totally in play. Can I work through an idea out loud that might have a little bit of a hater energy to it? And I don't mean to be that, but I just have a thought. So like Soto, besides the money, it was very clear in his conversations with teams that it was like, I want to be in the playoffs every year. I want to be competing for World Series. Mm-hmm. I am not in any way faulting Vlad Jr. for staying with the team for his whole career. This is a good thing. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. I would be, if I was Vlad Jr., I would have some concern about the future of the Toronto Blue Jays, right? I think that if he's like, number one ring chaser above all else, which I think is actually a bad way to live personally. I think there's more of like, I would want the Blue Jays to show me the plan, and maybe they did show him the plan, but like where I'm at right now, I think there's a lot of optimism having Vlad in place, but like, I don't see the plan. Like, I don't understand how this team is good in 2 years unless they're hitting on the free agents they signed, which they could, right? They totally could. But there just isn't that wave of young impact talent that's coming up to supplement what they already have.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm with you. I think we are in our right. It's totally fair for us to look at it. But for Vlad, it's a different calculus. And yeah. He wouldn't be the first person to sign an extension long term with a team that we didn't necessarily know what their future is going to be. Also, when you're signing for this long,
right?
Any player that loves the organization they've been with is going to be like, oh, well, at some point, you know, we'll be like, maybe, you know, after this year, we might have to be dealing with something. But it's like, that's so long.
It's kind of like
that. I'm sure they believe.
Yeah, yeah. It's like how Salvador Perez signed an extension in Kansas City and they got bad and then good again by the horrific. He was still there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's versions of this. Now, there's obviously much more depressing versions of this over in Anaheim. But at the same time, like, we understand that Vlad wanted to be here. And Vlad, I'm sure the other way is, hey, we get the Blue Jays back to the World Series and I'm a part of that. I should be a part of that. And I would like to be a part of that, whether that's happening in 2025 or that's happening in 2032 or whatever. He is believing in, again, the big picture Blue Jays, which is we are going to spend to continue to supplement it. And we are hopefully going to improve the farm system in the coming years one way or the other. But I agree with you. It doesn't necessarily change the pressure on the organization this year in some respects, just because of how bad last year went and because of how much they've invested in the 2025 roster. Yeah. That if you're spending this much, if you have the fourth largest payroll in baseball or fifth largest payroll in baseball, and you could conceivably finish last, like, that's not what you're paying for, and that is why you could critique the front office. And Jays fans, once they're done celebrating this extension, as they should, will probably get back to being frustrated with the state of the roster and the lack of depth on the mound and all those things, and that's totally legitimate. But again, you have this anchor in place that at least has a kind of North Star to build.
But at the same time, this organization in the Vlad Atkins Shapiro era hasn't accomplished. They haven't won a playoff game since 2016, right?
No, this isn't me defending what they've accomplished. I'm just it has to all be part. Like, again, what you're saying, it makes plenty of sense. If you're trying to convince Juan Soto to come there, I'd be like, well, why would I believe in that? You know, I don't know it. Why would I trust you?
But it's
a different thing. It's a different conversation when it's flat saying, well, same thing with Mike Trout and I'm same thing with all these other things.
Yeah. I think that if you're a fan of a team and your front office is failing with a big payroll, that is a better reason to be mad than if your front office is not spending enough. Because if they're not spending enough, that is a front office that's failing to get a budget from a stingy owner versus the front office that has gotten resources and has just allocated them incorrectly or improperly or inefficiently, right? You know, like, in Pittsburgh, Ben Cherington, who's running the Pirates, like, yeah, he would love $50 million to spend.
Right. 50. Yeah. Oh, man. 30. I mean, but that's the thing. It's a different conversation. And it does kind of put the Blue Jays in an interesting position from that
Absolutely.
Fan perspective.
Absolutely. Right?
Now, every fan base is not their money. But at the same time, you would feel like, all right, great. If we're going to be blasting into the luxury tax, whether it's my money or not, you would hope that it would be resulting in some more wins. Certainly didn't last year. And so far this year, as we're coming off with another weekend in which they get swept by one of the few teams that is spending more than them, hilariously enough, it does still put them in an interesting spot. How it kind of changes the lens of the Blue Jays season is very interesting. It is now a different kind of pressure, and it's also interesting because it now puts the pressure even more back on the front office. Like, yes, they have now accomplished in getting Vlad Jr. done, but now it's like, all right, great, well, you got it. Let's do something with this team, that because you're still going to have a lot of questions. They're going to have another busy offseason next year just because of the state of the payroll and how many guys they have coming off the books.
Blue Jays go back home to play. Well, they're on the road for a nice little stretch here.
Yeah, this is the other strange timing of this, is they're on a three-city road trip right now. They were just at the Mets. They're in Boston for four games starting tonight, and then they are in Baltimore before returning home in a week.
Jays at home on Monday, April 14th, against the Braves in what will be a Vladimir Guerrero celebration. Congratulations to Jays fans. Clap it up. You folks have been through an unfair amount of fandom strife over the last 4 years, and I am happy not only can you buy a Vlad Jr. jersey? You can get that thing freaking tattooed on your back if you want.
If you didn't have one already. I mean, come on now. This is the guy. He has always been the guy. He should be the guy. And I hope when we're doing this podcast in 2039 that we are talking about
Vladimir Guerrero III,
the greatest Blue Jay of all time, because that's what he should be. That is what he should be. All right. We are going to take a break. And when we return, we're going to talk about the baseball that happened, the baseball that was played over the weekend. We had, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sweeps to talk about. And then we'll probably turbo mode the rest because we don't have that much time. We'll be back here on Baseball Barbecues.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jays fans, feeling good? Well, that's over because the Jays were swept over the weekend. One of five sweeps we had while Jake and Jordan were losing our voices at a good friend's wedding. We didn't watch a whole lot of ball, but because this is our job, we get home Sunday night and we grind. We watch, we go to YouTube, no free ads, and we fly through the highlight packages. I watch them on 2x speed. Got the box score up.
Nice.
And so we can tell you what happened. You can believe us.
Yeah, at least roughly. I'm sure there'll be a few moments along the way that we missed. But we will focus here in this second segment, the five sweeps. And we will begin with those Blue Jays. It was not a great weekend in Queens as the New York Mets were cooking over the weekend. It was a weird sweep. It was not exactly the most like star-studded affair.
No one played well.
Game one, it was not pretty. We got Tyler McGill, looked great. Pete looks great, by the way.
Pete looks great.
Very good. Yeah. Mets shut him out on Friday. On Saturday, they come back late. Jesse Winker hits two triples, including a two-run triple to tie it late. Lindor with the walk-off sac fly. Jesse Winker had three career triples before Saturday. He has two on Saturday alone, which is an astonishing fun fact. And then on Sunday, very strange situation where David Peterson gets really nauseous and dizzy and like can't see the plate and is like walking a bunch of guys, and for some reason Mendoza leaves him in for like three more batters.
Their pitching coach Jeremy Hefner comes out and he's like, "You good?" And he's like, "No." And they're like, "All right, go get him."
Totally,
and then he goes back to the dugout. He walks a guy, he comes back out, walks another guy, and they leave him. It was very odd. I think they were just buying time to get someone hot, but hopefully David Peterson is okay.
Yeah.
And then the Mets,
seems like he's fine.
Mets hang on to
Mets hang on. Edwin Diaz hits two guys in the ninth, but they still win. This stat from Anthony DeComo: Reed Garrett, Max Kranich, Huascar Brazoban, one of my favorite Dominican Winter League pitchers, 18 and a third innings, 0.00 ERA. They have 16 inherited runners. Zero of them have scored. So that holy trinity of rando relievers, Garrett, Kranich, Brazoban, has been excellent so far for New York this season, as the Mets pitching staff patchwork with all their injuries has thus far been working wonderfully. The Mets have only allowed four home runs all season.
Jordan, you know, as the best ERA in baseball, the New York Mets.
How about
1-9-1?
Very impressive. Now it helps that they were facing a Blue Jays team that has not been particularly sterling offensively. The Blue Jays only have five home runs in 10 games, three of them courtesy of Andrés Giménez. George Springer and Tyler Heineman have the two others. So Vlad Jr., now that he has got his fat stacks, is going to have to start putting up some big power numbers, because this Blue Jays offense right now is not awesome.
Another great outing for Griffin Canning.
Dude, he's literally just spamming sliders. He's basically, and it's working. It's not really anything that revolutionary, but it's just, it's one of those things that you've seen, you see relievers do this all the time, where it's like, hey, dude, just throw your slider. Basically, 80% of the time, that's going to work. They're kind of just having him do that as a starter, and it's basically working for four innings. I don't know if he's actually going to stay in the rotation long term once guys are healthy, but it is working for the Mets so far. As you said, credit to New York. They are pitching it quite well.
The pitching dev magic rolls on. Four other sweeps. Red Sox over the Cardinals. The Sox are...
Pitching was not... This was
no one was pitching
display for either team over this weekend, but the Sox are they're a good time. They started 1-4. They are on a W5 right now. They are absolutely banging.
This
right
team
now.
Is
they
built
yeah.
to get Bill Simmons to care about baseball again.
Yes. And we will see if they can do it. Willie Abreu is doing for sure doing his part. Game one, we've got just an absolutely ugly slugfest, 13-9. Seven different Red Sox hitters have multiple hits. Saturday, oh yeah.
Can we from now on call that an Uggfest?
An Uggfest. That is exactly what that was.
Sounds a little bit
Saturday gets rain.
Like shoe related, but an ugly slugfest yeah, should true. Be an Uggfest.
That's true. You think Dan Uggla had Uggs? Probably not. We'll have to ask him whenever we have him on the podcast. Do people know what Uggs are? I don't know. Yeah. Saturday gets rained out, which means we have a doubleheader on Sunday. A little bit of a strange situation since this was slated to be Sunday night baseball. So we had an afternoon game where Ryan Helsley totally melts down, walks four guys at the end. Red Sox tie it up and then ultimately walk it off in extras. That's Willie Abreu, of course, who is hitting 500, I believe, and has been basically the best player in baseball so far this year. And then game three, Sunday Night Baseball, was batting practice. The Red Sox had 18 batted balls with a 100 mile per hour exit velocity or higher. Hunter Dobbins, one of their kind of depth starting pitching prospects, got called up, got the win in his major league debut. The Red Sox scored 18 runs on 22 hits. Rafael Devers is alive, whoa, folks. We were concerned. He looks fantastic now. I don't know if his shoulder is still hurting him, but he suddenly looks like Rafael Devers again. And they got this kind of terrifyingly creepy and entertaining home run celebration where they have a head that looks like their mascot, Wally, the mascot, but like a lot scarier. And they put it on after they hit a home run, and it is very disturbing and very entertaining, and clearly something that that will be a thing. And I think one of the first versions of that we've kind of seen this year as far as home run celebrations.
Netflix doc comes out tomorrow. See if anything interesting comes out of that. And the Red Sox are interesting. Their biggest crime last year was being boring, right? There are so many different layers to this Red Sox team. And as someone with severe ADHD, I am all in on the Red Sox because you can get distracted so easily and just you're like watching the team and it's like, oh, right, Willie Abreu has a laser. And then you're like, oh, right, Garrett Crochet's here. And then you're like, oh, yeah, Lucas Giolito's in the aisle. There's so many different storylines that you can care about with this Red Sox team, which compared to last year's nap time fest, yes, is a real breath of fresh air.
Very, 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 very refreshing indeed. The Cardinals pitching is very bad. Their offense is very good. They have 10 hits in all 9 games they've played this season. It's a strange version of a Cardinals team,
yeah,
but they will probably hit their way into some level of relevance this summer.
We told you about Ivan Herrera. We told you.
We did. It sucks he's injured now. Hopefully that's not long term. I know he had his 3-homer game last week. He looks great. Hopefully he will be back soon. Red Sox feeling good, and they welcome in those Blue Jays for 4 games starting tonight. 3 more sweeps. Let's go out west, where the best team in baseball, what? San Francisco Giants, they do now have the best record in baseball at 8-1 as they sweep the Mariners of Seattle. Friday was a wild game. I was happy to be not watching this as I got to spend time with you and a bunch of our high school friends and kept kind of just checking the score and just being like, what is going on here? I was glad that we didn't have service at this restaurant that we were at to follow what ended up being just an absolute heartbreaker for Seattle as they lose in 11 innings on Friday, 10-9, 32 combined hits against 17 combined pitchers. That sounds miserable. That looks like it looked more like a Coors Field box score than an Oracle Park one. The Giants win that one on Friday. Robbie Ray is pretty solid on Saturday. That was kind of a more straightforward game. And then Sunday, the Mariners come back in the 9th. Camilo Doval is one of those guys where you basically know if he's going to blow it. Like
pitch 2,
the first pitch he throws. Yeah, yeah, within. And I had just landed. I was at the airport and I was like, oh, here comes Doval. He's protecting. And I watched you just like yank the first fastball. And I was like, ooh, I think they got a shot here. And they do manage to tie it. And then in the bottom of the 9th, in a tie game. The Giants rally back. Patrick Bailey lofts a ball down the right field line. Victor Robles goes flying.
Wild play.
Into the net, into the corner. One of the best catches you will see all season. But unfortunately, it was bad. Even though he pretty much landed completely on the net, it was with such force and at such an unfortunate angle that he seriously injured himself. Now, at the time we were recording this on Monday morning, we don't know the severity of the injury. They said it was a shoulder injury. It looked very bad. And if they're missing Victor Robles for a long time, that is not great. It was an amazing catch. Unfortunately, Wilmer Flores walked it off 30 seconds later once they kind of Robles exited the game.
Carted off the field.
The Mariners.
Carted off the field with an arm injury.
Yeah.
Is
that speaks to
in
the,
some
to
ways
the pain that he was in.
Like grosser than getting carted off the field with a leg injury. Because you're in so much upper body pain that you can't walk off the field. It was really weird. I was listening to it on the radio while I was driving home, and I was like, what the hell does this look like? And then I watched the highlight, and I was like, nope, that tracks. The Giants, though, quickly, they're playing well, obviously, because they have the best record in baseball. Willy Adames, terrible so far. They have not gotten really any offensive contributions from Willy Adames, Tyler Fitzgerald, Lamont Wade, or Patrick Bailey. That whole crew has been bad. Everyone else has been like pretty good to really good. Mm-hmm. I think they're playing a little over their skis right now. The pitching, though, the run prevention stuff does look encouraging. Logan Webb throwing 75 innings every start. Like Jordan Hicks is the one I'm most interested to see if he can maintain that. Yep. With all due respect to the Mariners, I'm curious to see the Giants kind of get maybe a tougher opponent that they can, you know,
sure,
get tested by.
They are 8-1. They have won 7 in a row. Best start for the Giants since 2003. Love this stat from Sarah Langs. With the Dodgers also starting 8-1. First time two teams in the same division have started 8-1 or better. Ever. Since divisions were instituted in 1969. How about that?
Giants at home.
NL West is cooking.
Giants at home this week. 3 against the Reds. And then they have a very interesting road trip. 3 at Yankees. 4 at Phillies. 3 at Angels.
Oh, okay. So that we will definitely have a better sense for them after that trip. As for the Mariners, 3-7, worst 10-game start since 2017. Julio looks great, which is nice because he's basically always a slow starter. Other than that, it has not been pretty. They obviously have a bunch of injuries now as well. They have the Astros coming to town for 3 starting on Monday. The Astros also off to a not-so-awesome start. And one of those teams will be feeling not great whenever that series concludes.
Tigers sweeping the White Sox. Good to have the White Sox back, baby. Jordan will get eyeballs on them tomorrow at the Gardo's home opener with the White Sox rolling into town. But this was all about the Tigers. Tigers won again.
Yep.
Spencer Torkelson, who was the number 1 overall pick in 2020, and since then has just kind of underwhelmed seemingly at every turn, was sent down to the minors at various points last season. I'm buying. I'm in. I think he's changed some stuff meaningfully. He looks great. OPS over 1,000. Walk-off double on Sunday. Time will tell. Pitchers will adjust. He will have to readjust. I just think he looks way more connected and way cleaner mechanically than he has in previous seasons. Can he keep it going? Who knows? But I'm taking the over on Torque.
So the interesting thing with Torque, right, is the way we talk about him, you know, he struggled when he first came up in 2022. 2023, he hits 31 home runs. He's striking out a lot, but he has a 107 OPS plus. Like, he was an above average hitter.
Sure.
And at that point, it was like, okay, great. Here's the baseline, right? I mean, you want more from your number 1 overall pick, but it was like at that point, it seemed like he was trending towards being a good hitter. And then last year was obviously a disaster and very disappointing. And suddenly, you know, we start hearing the whispers of bust and, oh, man, what is this guy going to bring you if he can't hit? That's the whole point of Spencer Torkelson. Can he hit? Where would you are you expecting a 1,000 OPS for the rest of the season? I assume not. But like when you say you're buying, what does that mean? I'm curious.
120?
Like where? Because, again, like what do you say?
120 OPS plus.
120 OPS plus. OK, I think that. Yeah. I think that if he can bounce back to that, that would certainly be considered a successful season. Still, of course, 25 years old.
All you ask for Torque from this year is it like next winter, this upcoming winter, he's the first baseman. There's no
which was in question 3 months ago.
Right. That's right? What I'm saying. Like,
I mean, that's what's interesting about this. Yeah.
And that's what I imagine the Tigers want and Tigers fans want is just, you just want to know that Spencer Torkelson has a normal season with a regular baseline and we can enter next year talking about a big, big jump. Other sweep.
Yep.
Last one, Rangers over the Rays. DeGrom was like fine.
Yeah. He's kind of just easing into it. He's throwing a lot of strikes. He's getting hit around a little bit. He's not pumping 100. He's just kind of working his way into the season.
Throwing a lot of sliders. I think that's
exactly what he wants to do. Throwing a lot of sliders. Rangers are finding ways to win. The Rangers are 8-2 with a -1 run differential. They are 5-0 in one run games. They, of course, a lot of this is just because of the series they had last week against the Reds where they got absolutely blown out and then one consecutive 1-0 game. So that helps in this early season small sample. Saturday, Wyatt Langford hit one of the most impressive home runs of the season so far, taking Rays reliever Mason Montgomery deep. If you haven't seen Mason Montgomery, that guy is ridiculous. He's throwing 100 from the left side with some of the best fastball metrics you'll see from anybody. And Wyatt Langford turned that thing around.
We talk about, oh, it was this random Rays reliever throwing 92. He's so funky. Mason Montgomery is in a different bucket. Okay.
Yes.
Like, this is not some anonymous schlub that they picked out of indie ball from the Poughkeepsie, you know, shoelaces.
They have turned him into a real, real weapon. But Wyatt Langford didn't care as he homers a go-ahead homer on Saturday. And they got a bunch of walk-offs on Sunday as well. Jonah Heim with the walk-off. Kumar Rocker was much better in that second start of the year for him. So that was good to see. The Rangers are heading to Wrigley for 3 games starting tonight. That's probably the best series during these weekdays this week. Patrick Corbin debut on Tuesday. Can this Rangers win streak stretch all the way to Patrick Corbin? What does it look like? What does Patrick Corbin look like now as part of the Texas? I know our Nats fan producer, Colin Brennan, is amped to see Patrick Corbin in a new uniform.
Well, I was going to say, I can't imagine that guy in another uniform is like... that takes the form of like Verlander in a Giants uniform, right? Or like Frank Thomas on the Blue Jays at the end. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, I cannot wait to see that guy in a different uniform. Patrick Corbin, please.
Please. Any other uniform. We'll see how that goes for Patrick Corbin and the Rangers. But Rangers, obviously, they don't care what their run differential is. They are in first place and feeling quite good. Those are the sweeps. How sweep it was for those 5 teams. We're going to take a break. And when we return, we will turbo mode our way through the rest of the series from the weekend before we say goodbye. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. Let's throw everything else into turbo mode. We, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, were in Philadelphia over the weekend for this wedding, but because it was a wedding, we did not get to work the series of the weekend, which was Phillies hosting the Dodgers. Dodgers rolling in to the city of brotherly love with not a single loss on their record. And the Phillies said, don't care. Friday night's game, which I watched none of live because the welcome party was in a basement with no Wi-Fi and I was in the wedding. So it would have been very rude for me to be watching the game. Awesome ball game in which JT Realmuto effectively earned a save by throwing out Ohtani in the 8th and then Chris Taylor in the 9th inning. Just sick performance and a reminder that even in a slightly reduced state, JT Realmuto is a freak. He is a freak.
Yes. That said, you know what my takeaway was from that game?
The wind was howling or Jesus Luzardo looked good?
No. That never would have happened. Those base running blunders would not have happened if Clayton McCullough was still there.
Hell yeah, dude.
Again, Dodgers season, it's all their defense is totally catastrophic so far. It's all collapsing without Clayton McCullough. That is the only thing that is going to sink this Dodgers team.
Saturday, Dodgers win, even though it was a Roky Sasaki start, as Roky looked as good as he's looked, better.
He was throwing the ball over the plate. A lot of those fastballs were right down the middle, and that's fine.
A lot of hard
hit
outs. That
is better than non-competitive. A lot of hard hit outs. But no, what was it? 2 walks by the end. Yes, 2 walks. He completes 4 innings, only allows 3 hits, 1 run. So did not pitch enough to get the dub, but he kept them in the ball game. And the Dodgers' other pitchers were excellent the rest of the way. That was not the case on Sunday.
So this was just a weird day for you and I. You know, we wake up at the hotel, we do the welcome brunch or the goodbye brunch at the wedding, and then we go get a bite to eat in Philly. I drive you and your wife to the airport. And then I look at, I'm driving to DC. I'm in DC right now for this Dodgers Nats series. You know, I look at my phone, Dodgers Phillies, 2-run game in the fourth, fifth. You know, the airport's right next to the stadium. I have my credential. So I just whip on over to Citizens Bank Park, walk in the fifth inning, and take in what was a sensational four innings of baseball. As the Phillies throw Jordan Romano into the fire, and he does not have it right now. The Canadian reliever is looking a little cooked. Velo's down, not great. Dodgers come roaring back, and then the Phillies pounce for two runs late on a Bryson Stott loop single, just a perfect Bryson Stott single, and then a Edmundo Sosa beating out a double play ball. Edmundo Sosa, who is been amazing to the point that the Phillies might have to find a way to put him in the lineup every day. We're not quite there, but we're getting a lot closer. Phillies end up taking the series. There was a Nick Castellanos grand slam through the rain. Tyler Glasnow was very uncomfortable with the elements and was removed in the third inning. And this was this series, right? Okay. Probably the two best teams in the National League. Maybe disrespect to the Padres,
it's not the
Giants.
So, I mean, this was, we, you know, this was kind of the series we were hoping to see between the Dodgers and the Braves, and we got it with the Dodgers and the Phillies.
A lot of interesting takeaways from this. It was a reminder of the ways that these two teams are flawed and a reminder that these two teams are so talented and talented enough to overcome those flaws in an instant. So the Dodgers, right, I would say right now to me, their two biggest flaws are their defense is bad. And
which we kind of knew.
Which we knew.
But it's been
and their starting pitching remains volatile in that it does not offer length and dependability. So you get, you know, four innings from Sasaki on Saturday, and that's a good thing. But what that does is it means that you need to do Bonda, Kasperius, Vesia, Tanner Scott. And then on Sunday, when Glasnow only goes two, then you're throwing, you know, Luis Garcia in there for high leverage spots, right? And that is how things go wrong. We have Blake Snell hitting the IL for the Dodgers as well. Like, that is where they're flawed, but they go down big on Sunday and they are just, they have Mookie Betts, right? And they have, like, they have Mookie Betts and they have Teoscar Hernandez, and so they make it a ballgame. Phillies, on the other hand, their biggest flaw right now in my mind, besides the fact that on any given day they could strike out 20 times, is the bullpen. The bullpen is definitively worse than it was over the last couple seasons, and that's because Jeff Hoffman is now on the Blue Jays. And to try and replace Jeff Hoffman, they brought in Jordan Romano, who, as of now, just looks like a zero. And so they now have really three relievers that you can trust in high leverage. That's Matt Strom, that's Jose Alvarado, and that's Ryan Kirkering. And so it's just, I'm fascinated how they, but again, they just overcome that on Sunday because they're really good. You can't read too much into these early season series. They matter because the atmosphere is cool and it's easy to project to October. I'm very excited to see the Dodgers in person this week, kind of be around the madness, and I will report back on Wednesday.
Dodgers are going to the White House on Monday.
Which one?
Have a feeling by the time you are listening to this, you may know how that went, and we will talk about it on Wednesday. But we will acknowledge that in its current form as we can.
I'm not going.
Jake's not going. I think you would. It's probably literally happening right now, so that does not surprise me. Let us move on to... Let's go to Milwaukee. All right, now we're going to speed it up, folks. The Brewers taking 3 out of 4 against the Reds. This was the only four-game series over the weekend, and Milwaukee taken three games over Cincinnati. The Reds' scoreless inning streak reached 35, dude, their longest scoreless inning streak since 1946. Their offense is brutal. They do score 11 runs on Saturday to get the win, but they still lose the series. Jackson Chourio hits two homers on Sunday. Also has yet to walk this season.
Who needs it?
Has the most plate appearances in baseball without a walk, but nice to see Jackson Chourio swinging a hot bat. Nestor Cortes Jr. is injured, which means the Brewers' pitching depth continues to be thinned out. Hopefully, Jose Quintana will be back. But until then, we got Chad Patrick and Tyler Alexander, and Elvin Rodriguez wasn't very good. But those two other guys were, and that allowed the Brewers to win the series.
Pat Murphy might need to pitch this week. Yankees taking 2 out of 3 over the Pirates in Pittsburgh. Aaron Judge up to 6 home runs. Trent Grisham is alive with the Sound of Music. Sure, that's fine. I'm not sure how he slots in with the current alignment. If that means, like, what are you going to do? Put Dominguez as the everyday DH, I guess. Move Bellinger over to left and have Grisham roll in center field. Like, that makes some sense to me. But if you want Dominguez to learn to play left field in the long term, like, you got to get him some reps out there. But Grisham is kind of inching into earning some more playing time. He looks really good. This was the Pirates' home opener, which was overshadowed by them taking down a Roberto Clemente sign on the right field wall. Couple of thoughts here. Number one, I think we can critique the Pirates for a lot, okay? They do a good job of commemorating Roberto Clemente, generally. I think that is one of the few things about the Pirates organization that usually gets a thumbs up. This was a flub. Because anytime you edit anything related to Roberto Clemente in your stadium, just call the family. Just call the family in advance. Be like, hey, we're going to do this. Doesn't change anything. People are going to notice. It's not a big deal. There's 75 other Clemente-related things in the stadium. They didn't do that. Roberto Clemente Jr. tweets about it. It turns into a whole thing. Just another unforced error for the Pirates.
The Pirates, again, that was one of a few embarrassing moments over the weekend on the field. They were booed like crazy. Derek Shelton's getting booed, which is unfortunate during the home opener intros. They nearly get swept. I mean, they totally blow it on Sunday and ultimately go on to win it in extras. The Yankees cannot quite clinch the sweep there at the end. But hey, Heen Dog showed up, man. Heaney was dealing on Sunday, but you know, the Pirates still need extras to win that one. So they don't get swept, but the Pirates obviously still not feeling great.
Where do you want to go next?
Royals over Orioles. I watched 0 seconds of this. Didn't even watch the highlights. All I know is that Bobby Witt Jr. hit a home run and Gunnar Henderson is back. I know the Orioles lost the series. Gunner being back is really all that I care about. Oh, and then I saw Jorge Mateo just like drop the fly ball, and that had people really angry. Anything else from this one?
The Orioles pitching so far is exactly what we thought it was. We did get a better Sugano start on Saturday, and then Cade Povich had like a very hilarious, like, you know, 6 innings, just an enormous amount of walks kind of start. I really don't know what to think about the Orioles pitching so far.
All right.
It's not great.
That's fine. Well, guess what? They're going to keep Charlie Moore. We're going to get Kyle Gibson soon, I'm sure, as well. Let's go to Chicago. Oh, baby. We talked about the Padres on Friday being undefeated. They go into Wrigley and almost get swept.
Oof.
But Justin Turner cannot hang on to the ball for a double play towards the end of the game on Sunday that maybe could have helped the Cubs sweep the Padres. But the Padres eke out a very impressive victory on Sunday. The takeaway from this weekend is very simple. Kyle Tucker, holy crap.
Oh, yeah.
He is leading baseball with 10 extra base hits. He has 12 walks and 6 strikeouts. He looks like one of the best players in baseball. And Cam Smith is hitting 111 because he's barely played any baseball, and baseball is really hard. But Kyle Tucker, surprise, surprise, who has been an awesome major leaguer for half a decade now, is looking like the exact star that the Cubs needed, and that was on full display this weekend.
Athletics taking 2 out of 3 over the Rockies. We did have Chase Dolander, MLB debut, Rockies big pitching prospect. He was, you know, it was a perfect, like, good prospect debut start. A lot of strikeouts.
Especially cores adjusted.
Four runs. Just fine. He's totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep an eye on him. He struck out Jacob Wilson for the first time. First strikeout for Jacob Wilson this year. Rockies are calling up Zach Veen, one of their prospects. That'll be today, I guess, on Monday. A's Rockies, like, what do you want us to talk about this for 35 minutes? We're not going to do that. Nationals taking 2 out of 3 over the D-backs. The Diamondbacks confuse the heck out of me, man. Like, I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know. This was a weird one. They had Eduardo Rodriguez looked unbelievable, 12 strikeouts on Saturday, and they lose that game. Then Corbin Burns gets out-dueled by Trevor Williams on Sunday, and the Nats hang on to win late. Corbin Carroll looks spectacular. Any concern about a cold start for him has been, he was racking up the extra base hits over the weekend. The bad news for Arizona is Ketel Marte, who we just talked about getting that big extension. He is on the IL with a hamstring strain. Tim Tawa is up. This is a very fun story that we don't have time to get into now, but I hope that he hits enough in his role with the Diamondbacks so that I can tell the story of Tim Tawa even more at some point.
Not Tawa?
Tim Tawa. Tawa. Tawa.
Towel? Tawa. Tawa. Are you saying towel?
Tim Tawa.
I want to call him Tim Towel.
You know what's really frustrating? MLB just sent out the whole, like, here are the official pronunciations for every player. His was not on.
What?
So
Tawa Erasure.
D-backs PR, help me out. I believe it is Tim Tawa. I think. Anyway. He's
Jordan, fun. You ever go to Disney World? You ever go to Disney World and take a ride on the Tawa of Tawa?
The Angels take 2 of 3. Over the Cleveland Guardians, the Guardians' eternal road trip to start the season concludes in Anaheim. Jose Ramirez hits 3 home runs on Friday night as they take the series opener. But the Angels bounce back with 2 wins Saturday and Sunday. The Angels are one of just 3 teams to win their first 3 series to start the year, along with the Giants and the Rangers. Okay, Angels. Okay, yeah, we've seen the Angels start hot before.
And
Logan O'Hoppy looks great.
And the Phillies.
And the Phillies? Is that correct?
Yeah.
And the Phillies. Yes. Sorry. That's wrong. I wrote that very late last night. The Phillies have also won all their series. I apologize, Phillies. That's my fault. But hey, the Angels, look at them. They've won 3 series to start the year. The Gardos, not the greatest start to the year for them. They finally return home. I will be at their home opener on Tuesday against the White Sox when it will, I believe, be 28 degrees.
Oh.
So that will be delightful. I cannot wait for some frigid baseball.
Dude. 20
it'll be sunny at least.
8 degrees versus the White Sox.
I think it will be in the 20s.
That's...
I think it will be in the 20s. Yeah. So anyway, fun times for them. And Angels, yeah, hey, Angels keep playing well. Maybe we'll talk about them more. But for now, we will give Logan O'Hoppy his flowers. And we will move on. 2 more series. The Astros take 2 of 3 over the Minnesota Twins. The Twins offense, actually both of these teams' offenses have been awful. I know they scored a bunch of runs on Sunday. Yeah, just not an inspiring start to the season for either of these teams. Altuve generally looks good. Hitting defense continues to be something of a struggle. No surprise there.
He had his first 5 strikeout game of his career. I believe he went 0-for-5 with 5 strikeouts on Friday. And there was a very funny moment where all the whole like Twins stadium like stood up and was like cheering as he went down, like, you know, in a 1-2 count with 4 strikeouts, and the Twins lost. It's like, it didn't matter.
Right. And then, of course, multi-hit games on Saturday and Sunday with 0 strikeouts for Altuve because he is amazing. But yes, Astros, nice to get the series win, but yeah, just not a ton to feel awesome about for really either of these teams at all right now. Last series to mention, the Marlins and the Braves. We only got 2 games out of this one because Sunday got rained out. The Braves did finally get their first win of the season on Friday, dominating the Fightin' Fish 10-0. Spencer Schwellenbach, NL Cy Young, ? He looks amazing. 8 scoreless innings with 10 strikeouts against a fearsome Fish lineup. Not quite. But then on Saturday, the Braves offense went right back to sleep as they get shut out by the incredible quintet of Cal Quantrill, Ronnie Henriquez, Anthony Veneziano, Calvin Fauché, and Anthony Bender. And they didn't play on Sunday because it rained. What that means is that in August, When the Marlins return to Atlanta, that will be a 5-game series.
Funky.
A scheduled 4-gamer from August 7th to the 10th will now be a 5-gamer with a doubleheader on that Saturday, thanks to this rainout. The Braves are still the only team in baseball with one single win. Sean Murphy is back. Chadwick Trump is gone. Drake Baldwin is sticking around, and I hope that they can continue to give him at-bats. And the Braves will forge ahead, trying to climb their way back up the standings. Who do the Braves play this week?
The Phillies.
Jake, do they really?
Yeah, in Atlanta.
Oh, right, they do. I believe they welcome the Phillies to Atlanta. Zach Wheeler against Chris Sale on Tuesday. Yeah, I'll probably watch that. I will probably watch that.
Winner gets the Cy Young.
Yes. Actually, I'll say I'll watch that. I'll be at Shane Smith versus Ben Lively in 28 degree weather. So, sorry.
Oof size.
The real ball. Oh, it's a day game. I'm good. Never mind. I'll be able to watch both. Don't worry, everybody.
Everyone relax.
I won't only have Shane Smith versus Ben Lively. Paul Skeen's also pitching on Tuesday. All right, we're done. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Thank you to producer Colin Brennan. And we appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Congrats, Vlad.
Get that money. Congrats, Ovi.